everyone, and welcome to minute 10 of season 8 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we fubar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week is Alan Sanders of the guest, the Alan Sanders Show. Welcome back to the show, Alan.
Thank you so much. Happy Friday, buddy.
Happy Friday. Happy Friday. I hope you had a nice trick-or-treat Halloween night last night especially with your Halloween spectacular show.
Oh, the Halloween spooktacular. So much fun to be able to be adult trick-or-treaters on the air. Just laugh for 3 hours. And unfortunately, because Halloween falls in the middle of the week, I still had to wake up and do my morning show. So if the voice is a little rough, it's only because I was up all night.
Okay, that's good. It'll maybe just sound a little spooky. Maybe spookiness actually fits in with some of the things we might talk about today. I don't know. I have one Halloween connection to stuff today. I don't know if you have, or not.
Well, we'll have to wait. This minute, like this entire assault on the beach, there are moments that just stick with you. There is a moment we're going to get to that is as haunting and stays with you forever, I think, when you watch this movie.
Just wait to what I tell you about that. It's okay. Talk about it staying with you. I'm gonna read a quote from somebody that has stayed with me 26 years now since I first read that quote about this scene. But we'll get there. Okay. So okay. Minute 10 begins with Miller still in a daze and ends with Miller giving an order. So we ended things yesterday with, an explosion going off and the sound started getting muffled, and they continue it into today where the sound is really muffled and Miller has been, thrown off his game. He's lying on the – or he's kneeling on the ground trying to get up. And I mean, the first thing that you see when you turn on this minute is you see that Miller with blood streaks all across his forehead and his face, which once again, I mean, we've talked about this a lot during this week, but once again, they're showing us how visceral and how bloody this whole engagement was, and the fact that the men who are fighting are getting quote unquote splashed with blood and a mixture of blood and water. And, all the stuff that they have to go through is just even more harrowing than you would think. They're just being really, really realistic here with the way that this battle is being shown. I mean, we've talked a little bit over the week about the fact that this is not like an MCU movie, where the action and the gore and stuff like that is there, just to, keep things fun, that type of thing. Here, this is trying to show us as dramatic as in a dramatic way how deadly and bloody this whole assault was.
I mentioned it, as you said already this week, does everything to not glorify us. What we watch is men who are forced to do something that nobody would want to do. Nobody would want to knowingly jump in the middle of this. And what I like about this sequence that went from this minute or from last minute into this minute is even someone who may be seasoned can be shell-shocked for the moment. And I think what I like about it, and especially when you talk to veterans who saw this movie, whether they were World War II veterans when it first came out or veterans of any engagement, is you get the moment of you're lost in what you're seeing and you can't really wrap your mind around it. It's almost like your mind can't take it all in. And I think Tom Hanks did a beautiful job conveying that, because it's not like he's saying anything. And when he was acting on the beach, correct, he didn't know if they were going to super slow-mo it. He didn't know about the sound that they were going to add. He just had to emote this idea that he's watching one horrific moment after another, this montage of battle through his perspective. And then we see his reaction to it. It captures everything about the whole notion of PTSD, shell shock, people who just what they've witnessed and why maybe they never want to talk about it because they never want to relive it again.
Now, I mean, I remember when I saw this. So I was trained as an infantry soldier. And I remember that I had reserve duty not long after this. And so me and all the guys were talking about this, how this sequence is so scary for somebody who's done training like this, because you actually see, what battle could potentially be like because it's so realistic and stuff like that. So it's scary enough for people who don't have a background with this type of stuff, but someone who has a background, I mean, again, so thankfully I've never had to deal with that, but just to have the what could or what did happen, back then is just scary to just even think about.
It's painting the reality of war, and it's something that you would hope that people up the food chain would go, okay, we need to figure out any other way to solve our problems other than this.
Okay, but as history has told us, unfortunately, there isn't.
No, sometimes, and I understand. Yes,
Sometimes you don't have a
I'm
choice.
not Pollyanna about the world. You've got bad actors on the stage, and there are people who, for whatever reason, will choose death over life.
Correct. 100%. And therefore, you need to combat that. That's, That's why we like watching movies that are all about good versus evil and stuff like that, hoping that there is a way to finally defeat evil. I know you're a big Harry Potter fan. That's the main point of Harry Potter is the good versus evil.
Isn't it the point of a lot of books? I mean, Lord of the Rings,
Yes.
Harry Potter, I mean,
Star Wars.
Star Wars, yes, the Empire. We are conditioned, based on our Western ideals and Western culture, we're conditioned to root for the good guys and we want to see the bad guys lose.
Correct, because we want the good guys to win. That's what it comes down to.
And of course, the movies that always make us go, wait a sec, are the ones that make us go, well, how do you know you're the good guy? Because sometimes the bad guy thinks what they're doing is for the, and those are some of the more complex. And I love, you brought up the MCU. I think that's what I've liked about the character of Thanos. In his mind, he's to save the
Correct.
universe. And those are the scariest villains when they think they're doing good.
Okay, but most, I guess you can say, most supervillains in this world and in fictional worlds act that way. The best ones, even if you go back to all the, you do a list of all the James Bond villains. Okay, most of them believe that they are doing the right thing because they want to try and better society or whatever it is. The fact that Thanos fits in with that, of course. It makes sense. And then if you look again at any you look at dictators over the centuries, it's the same thing. They wanted to make things better. It wasn't that they just said, I wanna, I'm evil and I wanna go kill everybody. It's that once I get rid of these people, everything will be better. That's the way they look at it. Which, is a problem. It's a big problem.
It can be if you're on the other side of them trying to say we don't need your
That's
kind.
correct. Exactly.
It's like, well, I have a problem with
Yes.
that. Excuse me, sir. I know you want to do this, but you're coming after me, and I kind of like living. So could we like maybe revisit this topic?
Correct. So back to Miller, who's in this like daze. And again, as you said, the editing is great here because the way that they have the muffled sound. So we can experience with him the fact that he's a little bit shell-shocked by what just went on around him. And it's perfect because it gives us a chance in not in slow motion, but in a slower pace to actually see some of the things that are going on. And then Miller looks around and he sees a soldier that's just looking around. He's looking, trying to find something. And when you look at him, you finally realize that, wait a second, this guy's missing his right arm. And it's just really strange. Like, what could he be looking for? And then he like bends down and then stands up and then bends down again. And around him, there are all these other soldiers that are crawling around, trying to move along the beach and stuff like that. And then when he picks up the second, when he stands up the second time, you see that he's actually holding his bloody arm in
Yeah, his
his
severed
severed
arm.
arm, exactly, that he has now picked up from the ground. And then he just starts running forward, continuing with his mission, which it goes along with what we've been talking about all week, that a lot of these, one of the things that this movie does is it shows us the various personalities of soldiers during battle and how each of them are acting differently with everything that's going on. You know, some are scared, some are gung-ho. You know, here's a guy who's obviously in some form of shock, and but is still continuing along with his mission.
Well, and though here's what I took from it. I don't, and I'm not arguing with you, I see it as the, he thinks, I'm going to go find someone to fix this. In my mind, he's running to go find a medic. Or,
hey, yeah, of course.
On my arm, can you put this back on? Like, obviously, you're not going to put it back on. But the shell shock of the moment.
But it's can you put this back on in order for me to continue with the battle? That's what it, that's the way I see it.
I see it as a young kid who thinks you can just put a Band-Aid on this, right? Like you can just fix this, right? I mean, that's for me, that's the horrifying moment of what would you do if you look and saw your limb blown off? I mean, he's literally picking it up to take with him. So, hey, maybe you can put this back on. I mean, I see it that Correct. Way of yeah, the yeah, horror for sure. of you're aware. You're not just got shot and you're dead. It's not like the kid who he's trying to help, or, you know, a couple of minutes ago in the water, and all of a sudden he gets hit in the heart, gone instantaneously. I mean, this is someone who's well aware that he's lost a limb. He's looking for it in the middle of – it's horrifying to me. Like, this sticks with me because you're wondering, what is he? Is he going to pick up his rifle when he picks up his own arm? And you're like, most of us in the audience are saying, well, you know you can't – you're not going to be able to reattach. Why are you picking up your arm? It makes no real sense. And then you say, well, if you're not thinking, you're like, I need to fix this. Like you immediately, I don't know. For me, I thought of it as one of those harrowing moments of like, it's great to see bullet shots. It's great to see people get shot in the head, in the heart, whatever. But when you're like an amputee suddenly, and you're looking down to a limb that you've had your whole life, and you're like, what? It's so jarring that you almost can't process it while you're watching the movie the first time.
Correct. I completely agree with you. Now, this is what I was mentioning before that I wanted to bring up a quote. Now, I remember, you know me, and most of the people who are listening know who I am, that, you know, I see lots of movies. I read lots of movie reviews, you know, over the last, 40 years or whatever it is. But the movie review that Roger Ebert gave of this movie has always stuck in my mind because he mentions this scene. And so I'm just going to read the two paragraphs here of, you know, from his review that, again, you know, I read this 26 years ago, and I still remember the fact that he mentions it in his review, which to me was just, wow. Mm-hmm. So, okay, quote from the late, great Roger Ebert. The movie's opening sequence is as graphic as any war footage I've ever seen. In fierce dread and energy, it's on par with Oliver Stone's Platoon, and in scope surpasses it, because in the bloody early stages of the landing forces and the enemy never meet eye to eye, but are simply faceless masses of men who have been ordered to shoot at one another until one side is destroyed. Spielberg's camera makes no sense of the action. That is the purpose of his style. For the individual soldier on the beach, the landing was a chaos of noise, mud, blood, vomit, and death. The scene is filled with countless unrelated pieces of time, as when a soldier has his arm blown off. He staggers, confused, standing exposed to further fire, not sure of what to do next. And then he bends over and picks up his arm, as if he will need it later. So again, it just, you know, that quote always sticks with me. I don't remember very much from 26 years ago. Yeah, I can honestly say that. Because it was so long ago, but I remember that I read that, that review of this movie, and I knew right away where to go and look for it. I remembered it was Roger Ebert. I remembered, you know, that he mentions about the severed arm. I've been waiting, 10 days to talk about this one.
I think it's a testament to what I just said and what you've said, and there are moments in this film that will never leave you.
Correct.
And the fact that this is one of those moments that I brought up. You and I weren't talking, had your notes beforehand. We're kind of reacting in real time as we're watching it. And I think it's amazing that it affected Roger at the exact same, like the exact same moment affected him as it did me, as it did you, which means it's probably affected a lot of people who saw this movie, especially if they were in the theater seeing it the first time.
That's correct. 100%. So now we're going to deviate a little bit because I want to test your knowledge.
Severed arms? I don't know a whole lot about them.
Well, we're going to get there. First of all, what is the technical term for reattaching a limb?
It's like on the tip of my tongue. It's not reattach. Obviously you're reattaching. It's like to replant. Is that it? To replant?
Very good. Replantation.
Okay.
Very
replantation. Good. Okay. I'm like, oh, it's
replantation.
Like
replantation. Yeah, you got it. So replantation or reattachment is defined as the surgical reattachment of a body part that has been completely cut from the body. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, there are 13 different appendages that have been successfully reattached. Okay. To people over the decades.
Okay.
Let's see how many of those 13 you can guess.
Well, I'm going to go with finger. I'm assuming toe is separate from finger. Do they count thumb as separate from finger, or would that be a finger?
No, thumb is part of the finger.
Okay, so finger, toe, hand, foot, leg, arm. Oh, 13 different things. I'm guessing you could cut your nose off to spite your face. Could you reattach your nose? I'm going to guess
yes. Nose is not on this list, no.
Nose is not. Okay, so I've got 7. I'm guessing since you didn't say I didn't get them.
So far you've gotten fingers, hands, arms, toes, feet, legs, and ears.
Okay. I can't think of what else do you hack off a body that you need to get that? All right, give me a hint.
So there are 6 more. There are 6 more. Yes. Two of them, I can't even explain how they do it, but whatever.
I hope we're not going to talk about the... Okay. Male and female anatomy.
Not female anatomy. So male.
Oh, we do have
male anatomy. John Bobbitt.
Was the Lorraine.
That's Bobbitt. Right. The Bobbitt case. Yes.
Lorraine Bobbitt.
Yes. So.
I guess when you have to chop a dick off of me, you gotta add a dick to me.
That's right. Exactly.
Can I reverse this? I made a horrible life choice.
Exactly. So yes, penis is on there. So you got another 5 to go.
I can't. I mean, I can't think of. Give me a hint, okay? I got the male appendage.
Popeye
the Sailor Man. Oh,
No.
Popeye. He eats spinach. I said arm.
Well, there's the arm, and then there's the forearm.
Oh, forearm is separate from the whole arm. Oh, I got it. From shoulder down versus your shin.
No, that's not listed here. It just says legs. Okay. It says feet and legs. That's it. So then you also have lips.
Ooh. I want to know what were you doing that you lost your lips?
Exactly. Seriously. Maybe it's like a Christmas story type of thing. You know, he was
stuck to a flagpole. You know,
that's right.
Tongue one of them?
Tongue is one of them. Yes. Okay, and then the last two are ones that I'm not really sure how it really works, but it is your scalp and face.
You know, I had heard, talk about the movie Face Off, which was so fantastical 20 years ago. I heard that they had their first, so this is new. I mean, this is something you couldn't do World War II. I had heard they had their first face transplant.
Okay.
Now, I don't know how that works, but that's bananas. I mean, wow. Scalp, kind of get that back.
Yes, that would be interesting, yes. Now, what do you think the success rate of replantation has been?
Well, I mean, it's hard to tell.
In general, again, we're not going to go through each of the 13 or whatever.
Right.
What's the general
I'd like to think
success rate?
Better, and depending if you can pack your limb or whatever has been cut off in ice right away and you get treatment right away, I'm going to say at least a 50-50 chance, greater than 50%.
Okay, so what it says here is that when there are sharp guillotine-type injuries – with relatively uninjured surrounding tissue,
mm-hmm.
those are the areas that are the easiest or the best post replantation prognosis with a success rate of 77%.
Wow. Okay. So,
which is amazing.
A clean cut is easier for them to reassemble.
Well, look at Lorraine Bobbitt,
yep.
Lorena Bobbitt, or whatever her name was. You know, must have been a very clean cut. So, how far back do you think it goes? Like, when do you think the first replantation was?
I got to imagine even in Shakespeare's day, they were trying to figure out how to sew things back onto people. I don't know if they had any success, though. Gosh, how far back? I mean, are we looking for successful or just the attempt?
No, it's successful.
Oh, okay.
No, but again, we're talking about real stuff, not like leech therapy and all that stuff back, from who's the barber here?
World War One, we'll go. Maybe were they practicing that maybe in World War One? So like the early 1900s.
Nope, it actually was in May 1962.
Wow, that late?
Yep.
Okay.
A 12-year-old boy was attempting to hop a freight train, and he fell and severed his right arm cleanly at the shoulder. And they were able to put it back together.
Wow. So this is, in the grand scheme of mankind, this is a...
It took this kid 4 years to be able to get full arm function back. So it's not immediate. This is going to take a while.
Well, yeah. And I got to imagine... We've learned a lot about how to reconnect nerves and veins and all the muscles and then the rehab and the drugs that you can have and the therapy since then. But this is I'm shocked. This is a relatively new procedure when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. Because 62
and
about 62 years that they've been doing this.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, that little Johnny, actually his name, no, actually the kid's name was Everett Knowles. But yeah, that's just nuts to think about that. But, 62 years ago, they were able to put this, I wonder if the guy's still alive and whether it works.
It gives me, I'm glad I live in the age in which I live, just in case, I have a rogue train run over my arm.
Or if you piss off your wife a little too much.
Yeah. Now I will tell you, based on what you just said, this poor soldier on the beach, had this procedure been around, I don't think that's a clean cut.
No, it does not look like one.
I think this is the exact opposite of what you would be hoping for if you want to reattach a limb.
Yes, I would agree with you.
Have you ever seen the movie, speaking of, war movies, have you ever seen 13 Hours, the movie that was about the Benghazi attack?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There is that moment where the guy's arm isn't totally blown off, but it's barely just hanging on. And I remember them saying, don't play with it, put it so they could reattach it. But it's amazing. Like there's a similarity of that kind of a wound on a modern soldier.
Well, have you seen Black Hawk Down?
It's been have I seen the whole thing or have I seen moments? I can't remember. I don't think I've seen the whole thing.
Okay, so I actually just rewatched it last week, and there's a certain point where one of the characters picks up a hand and puts it in like a pouch because someone lost a hand in order to be able to save it in order
gotcha.
Afterwards.
Yeah.
To reattach it. Well, and obviously like
we don't want to belabor this, but the best success is if you do lose a limb, you hope somebody's packing it in ice ASAP to try to preserve it.
Yes.
And I'm assuming correct. That medics and people in the field have either hermetically sealed or, like you said, like a pouch that maybe has an ice bag or something, or what do you call it? Like the little things that you crack open, little chemically create a sense of cold to try to preserve the limb.
The slight connection I wanted to Halloween is, Frankenstein is basically a man with replanted limbs.
Yep. He is a stitched together.
That's right. Fits right into this category.
Well, it was already horrifying enough without having to pull the Frankenstein illusion, but absolutely. Nice callback to trick-or-treating.
Exactly. And it just happened to fall out on today.
Mm-hmm.
And, when you look at Miller as he's looking at this guy, he has this dumbfounded look on his face. Not to the point where he's going to scream at the guy or say, what are you doing or anything like that. He's still just taking in all the moments that are happening around him, which we're gonna get more and more of over the next 2.5 weeks
mm-hmm.
that they continue to storm this beach, but still. And we hear the sounds of all these ricochets behind, even as he's looking for his arm. He has no idea where that arm is.
Right.
So the whole thing is just it's very, very scary to be watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the shot goes back to Miller, who's still in his gauge, his daze. And in the background, you can see a whole bunch of soldiers running out of a Higgins boat that is on fire. And a bunch of them themselves are on fire, you know, put out those fires. Some of them are trying on their own, you know, by jumping in the water and stuff like that. And Miller's just looking at them. Mm-hmm. You know, again, Miller is still out of it. He's in his own world right now as he's taking in all of the horrors.
This, by the way, is the one shot, and I only think about it from a filmmaking perspective, that pulls me a little bit out, because we know he's not where he was. Every other shot, he's right up against one of the what do you call the Razorbacks? The
Czech Hedgehogs.
The Czech Hedgehogs. For whatever reason, Spielberg decided to pull him in the middle of the beach with nothing around him so we could see this shot in the background. He's not anywhere close to where he was when he started this montage. You don't think about it when you're watching the movie in real time, because it's an example of seeing the horror of war. I still don't know why Spielberg didn't have at least a bar or something showing he's still in the same relative position, why he suddenly got wide open beach. Maybe because he just wanted to capture this shot, which I do think is incredible. Some people are so panicked, maybe they don't realize they're on fire. They go run up the beach. Some people get off and just start standing there like, I don't know what to do. One guy does have the presence of mind to say, hey, there's water here. I'm going to go jump in the water. I do like the chaos of seeing this carnage. I just, from the fact that I watch how things are framed, it does bug me just a tiny bit. We're not where we last left him.
There are continuity errors in this movie. There's no question about that. You know, it's not.
And I think it's impossible to have perfect continuity when you've got this much chaos. You're going to find things that just don't match because it's impossible. You're setting up each of these shots as a unique individual. You know, you're literally setting the cameras up for just this one particular shot.
Right.
You're not going to. And it took weeks. It took weeks to do all this. So
yeah.
It's not like. It was all done in 30 minutes.
Right. And then Miller reacts to everything, and he reaches down and grabs his helmet, and we see him, mm-hmm. You know, hang on to his helmet, and he starts to pick it up, and we see, you know, there's some water sloshing around in it, and then he puts it on his head, and we see once again that it's not just water, it's a mixture of water and blood. So it's all just been running down his face, and he's not fazed by it at all. He's still in this little bit of a stupor, mm-hmm. the whole thing.
What I like, though, time-wise, the fact that he's putting the helmet on is the indication that he, even if it's just automatic, there's a part of him, the training, the muscle memory is like, I need to protect myself. And it's a sign that he's finally getting back. He's
That's
not
right.
yet there, but at least he's pulling himself out of this shock. To get back into like what's going on.
For sure. And then the sound starts coming back, and we hear I guess the sound of a missile or you know, something, you know, a mortar or a missile or something like that. You hear the whistling sound in the background. Something's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Then we see a shot of another soldier that's trying to talk to Miller, and Miller has absolutely no idea what this guy's trying to say. He can't understand him at all.
We're still not entirely like it's not super slow mo, but you know, it's not still, we're not real time yet. It's still moving a little slower.
Right.
Everything's still muffled sound wise, but in terms of the visual, it's all still moving a little slower than the brain can catch up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a wonderful technique. I think we talked about it yesterday, but this technique, it puts you in the moment. You're sensing what he's sensing. You feel it as an audience member.
Right. Which is amazing. I mean, the idea to make us feel what he's going through and the way that they do it is just unbelievable. It always just blows my mind the way that this movie just puts us right there,
mm-hmm.
you know, watching everything as it's going on. The soldier who was just mouthing something, now it starts coming into focus and we can hear what he's saying. And he says, I said, what the hell do we do now, sir? Still see that Miller's a little bit confused. He doesn't know how to answer this guy right away. And then we hear in the background we hear Horvath scream, Captain Miller, Captain Miller, Captain mm-hmm. Miller. You know, and if you look over, you see that he's like waving towards him, you know, trying to flag him down type of thing. And then Miller himself has finally come to his senses, and he looks over and he sees Horvath and he goes, Sergeant Horvath. And then he starts motioning to him and he says, move your men off the beach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he's back. I mean, I love the way that this minute is framed. because the whole idea, and he like uses his hand to like, you know, make a moving motion. And like, get, you know, what are you guys standing there for? Get out of the way. You know, mm-hmm. that type of thing. But I love the way that this minute is framed, where it starts off where you really can't hear anything, and then it ends with Miller finally regaining his senses and ready to move forward, ready to go to the next stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's great.
There is, again, I always come at it from a filmmaker's perspective. There is there's a great technique they're doing here. It doesn't make sense in terms of what would be causing the slash, but it works so well. There's no way there's a bomb going off. There's no way there's a mortar going off. But if you watch the way they want to create action inside the front of the frame, someone is right below the camera splashing like their hand in the water, causing these jets of water up. And then they add a sound effect of a boom, as if there is a bomb or is something exploding. There's no way something would be exploding that close to have the water, but it doesn't matter. Where it's the additional business on the screen. So you waves crack the men shouting. You've got him making the gesticulation to like get off the beach, but at the same time, two or three times, you've got water literally spraying up as if it's going to hit us, watching him give these orders, as if we're right there and the water is literally on the screen in between us and Captain Miller. It's a great visual technique to give us the sense that we're viscerally right there at that moment. Like the water is literally splashing up on us.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Again, when you're in the theater, you definitely feel it because of the surround sound and all that stuff. You really do believe that you're standing mm-hmm. there, right, or crouching there right next to Miller with everything mm-hmm. that's going on. You know, which, again, amazing. No mm-hmm. question. There's no other word to it. You know, and I have a feeling that even, I mean, we talked a little bit earlier this week about Hacksaw Ridge, but I still do not believe that there is a war movie that has surpassed what Spielberg did here in this opening scene.
I mean,
Hacksaw Ridge comes close.
I just recently rewatched it. I'm glad Mel Gibson didn't try to do it like Spielberg did. He did it the way he wanted to do it.
Oh, for sure.
It's still darn powerful. I mean, it may be the second closest.
Again, I just mentioned Black Hawk Down. Black Hawk Down also has a lot of very powerful action scenes that come across in a very visceral way. You know, so there are other movies that have done things, you know, beyond what they did here. But again, this, in my opinion, is one of the best, if not the very best. It's the best scene in a war movie. That's what I would say.
Yeah.
All right. Do you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, I think as we progress, I wanted to talk about some of the camera things and especially the one continuity error we already talked about. But in general, Tom Hanks, just phenomenal performance, considering he had no lines to say until the end for the last couple of minutes, just conveying so much with his face and his eyes. And then you mix that with an outstanding sound design and editing technique, as well as the visuals, the framing. And I know Spielberg was literally on the beach running the camera for a lot of these shots. A lot of times, you know, directors will have a camera operator, somebody who's the cinematographer who's responsible for capturing the shot, and he's directing. I know he did a lot of the handheld himself because he was like, this is the shot I want. I'm just going to get it myself. So
right. You're
literally watching Spielberg's choices that he made as a cameraman.
Right, which is cool. mm-hmm. All right, very cool. Every Friday, we have a segment called Filmmaker Friday, where my guests will give their top five Steven Spielberg-directed films. So once again, I know that this season is not an easy one for people to make their top five choices, but oh well, tough luck. You still got to figure out how to
do it. Let me say this. This was a little easier than I thought because I just put one extra criteria. What? Because he's got a lot of great movies. Let's face it. He's one of the greatest filmmakers of our generation, of the age of filmmakers. But I wanted to go with what also gives me rewatchability. What are the movies that I go to and say, oh, I know I'm going to enjoy this from start to finish. Some of the movies I've seen of his are phenomenal, but they're not the feel-good movies that I go and plunk down to. I'm not going to sit down and watch Amistad for fun. You know, I'm not going to watch Schindler's List because, you know, I've got nothing else but 3 hours of extra free time. You know, those are heavy, very well done movies, but they don't have a lot of rewatchability simply because the subject matter is so heavy, it's not fun to go through it.
Okay.
So I kind of used a different criteria. So for me, I'm going to go backwards 5-1. Number five, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I still feel like the kid when I was in the movie theater, every time I watch it, because I didn't know there was such a place as Devil's Tower. I didn't know that was for real. I thought that was just in the movie. So for me, sudden realization of like how all these people had this vision of this place. And it's like, I'll never forget as a kid, like, oh my God, that's the vision. That's what they're thinking. And it hits me every time when I rewatch it, like I'm back to being a kid.
Oh, wow.
Number four is this movie, Saving Private Ryan. I know a lot of people say it's so heavy because of this opening sequence, because it is so heavy. I love this movie. And maybe it's because I'm a World War II movie guy. I know all of the war movies that I watch with my dad. They're all about war and people die. And there's a, you shouldn't, again, we don't glorify it. But in terms of rewatchability, this has got, this is the most rewatchable World War II because it never feels dated. It never feels old. It never feels fake. Some of the old earlier movies, you go, okay, that's the best techniques they had of the day, or, you know, it's not really as exciting as maybe it could have been. And you look past it. This one, it still holds up after all the years that it's been released. It's still one of the great, if not one of the greatest World War II movies. If I think I ranked this number two overall. Patton, I only picked that because of the being a biopic.
Right.
So Saving Private Ryan, number four. Number three, Jurassic Park. For me, I talk about this a lot on the radio. Star Wars was the movie I remember as a kid seeing in the theater that blew me away so much that that became the movie I wanted to see all the time. For my daughter, her version of that story is Jurassic Park. So for her, when she sees Jurassic Park, that's her Star Wars. And so we will rewatch Jurassic Park as a family over and over and over. It's got that rewatchability. It's so much fun. And it's definitely got a connection to our kid. One of our daughters and all of our kids love the Jurassic Park movies, but there's something about the first one that we just keep going back to. Still holds up. And you think to yourself, that's the first time they ever digitally created an animal on screen, and it still holds up.
Yep.
Number two, this one I'll never forget seeing in the theater for the first time, and it became one of my all-time favorite movies, Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's my wife and I, when we can't agree on what movie to watch, we can always agree on watching that one. When we're just sitting down, you want to watch something, and we can't, when we go back and forth for 10 or 15 minutes, we eventually decide, you know, let's just watch Raiders. We know we're going to love it. It's great fun. It is what movies are supposed to be about when you want escapism, and nothing beats the first Raiders of the Lost Ark. And it is not Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. No, it is just Raiders of the Lost Ark. And number one, my number one favorite Spielberg movie, the movie that reinvented or created the summer blockbuster and made us afraid to go into the water, Jaws. All-time favorite still. I talk to people all the time that want to get into film, or if they're talking about how do you write a script or how do you go out. I'm like, watch Jaws. You have a perfect three-act structure in that movie. Watch how they construct the three different acts. Watch how they go about creating character. Look at how they create tension. Look at what they do with character development, storytelling, using the camera to advance the narrative. That is, you could go to film school just watching Jaws.
Wow. Yeah. It's a great
movie. I do have an honorable mention in light of yesterday being Halloween, and the fact that I did my buddy Walt Murray, who I think will be on with this audience at some point. We used to do a Movies by Minutes.
Yeah, he'll be on in three weeks from now.
3 weeks. Okay. So he and I did a couple of movies where we broke them down a minute at a time, but we did bonus movies where we broke them down in chunks at a time for people who were subscribers. And we did Poltergeist. And the reason I'm bringing up Poltergeist as an honorable mention is I know Tobe Hooper gets the director credit, but I know for a fact Spielberg was on the set every single day except 3 days. He was there lining up shots, lining up the camera. And it is still the single best scary ghost movie. And I watch it every Halloween, which we did this past season as well. The original Poltergeist. I know he's technically not the director because the rules at that time, he had to pick which movie do you want to get director credit. You were doing E.T. You've got Poltergeist. Pick one. He chose to direct E.T. and get the director credit there. But he was on the set just about every single day with Poltergeist. And I love that movie. So honorable mention. He may have not gotten the director nod, but he certainly was behind the scenes.
I actually thought you were going to go with the Halloween aspect of E.T. by the fact that they go out trick-or-treating.
No. I still – and the attempt to remake Poltergeist a few years ago with Ryan Reynolds was just – it was a sad attempt. You still can't beat the original.
Understandable. Agreed.
So there you have it.
All right. Thank you very much for that list. And thank you for joining me this whole week, or actually most of this week and one day most last week.
Yeah. Thank you. But thank you for inviting me on this, because it is my second favorite World War II movie. It does hold a special place for me, because having watched movies like this with my dad, being introduced to World War II movies all the way back to the golden age of Hollywood, and now with him not with me, having died several years ago now, whenever I watch any World War II, or for that matter any Western, there's always that connection to my dad. And so thank you for allowing me to be part of this, because I feel like it was a fun journey to be on with you to talk about this film.
All right. And, you will be back. You've been invited back for minutes 156 to 159, which we'll be in about 6 months from now. But, hopefully you'll still want to come back at that point.
I may not even be around. I mean, that's a long time.
Okay, exactly. Well, we haven't recorded it yet. Just letting everyone
that's
know.
That's true.
So.
Well, we got 6 months, so.
You have 6 months to find time for us to record. All right. So, Alan, would you like one final time just tell people where they can find Alan Sanders?
Yeah, I do a different kind of show now. You can go back in time if you do a search for The Wilder Ride, where we did break down a couple of Gene Wilder movies 1 minute at a time, very similar to this show. We did Young Frankenstein and Blazing Saddles. But if you want to go with what I'm doing today, I do break down the news of the day 1 day at a time. I do a news talk program called The Alan Sanders Show. You just Google it like anything else. Google it and put in your favorite podcatcher. So if you're an Apple Podcast guy, just say The Alan Sanders Show Apple Podcast, or The Alan Sanders Show Spotify, or The Alan Sanders Show Podomatic. Whatever you'll find it. I'm pretty much everywhere. And very much about what's going on in the world of politics. So that may not be everyone's cup of tea.
All right. Well, politics are very relevant, for no matter where you live, and especially now on the first day of November.
we are on the cusp of finding out what's going to happen to the world.
That's right. Correct.
I find it ironic. Let me give you a movie quote. I find it ironic because V for Vendetta is one of my go-to movies as well. And I always remember and watch it on the 5th of November. And here we are looking at a pretty amazing date on November the 5th. And I just hope it goes the way that I want it to, because I do believe in that quote, governments should fear their people. The people should not fear their government.
Correct. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Alan, seriously, thank you very much for joining us over the last 9 days for 5 of those days. It was definitely a lot of fun discussing this with you. Hopefully, all of the listeners also enjoy it, have as much of a fun time as you and I have had. So, thank you very much.
Well, thank you again. And I am looking forward to being on the backside of this journey, and looking forward to everyone's take as we make our way through this film 1 minute at a time.
All right. Excellent. So I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, earn this.
Earn this. In my solitude.